Aloha, everybody. This is Kathy Bilski, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite Show, your spiritual warrior goddess on UPRN Radio at uprn.radiostream321.com. And it is October 21st, 2016, Friday night. Well, Saturday night just depends on where you are, to what time it is, huh? Well, tonight I've got a really interesting show for you. I have the New York Times best-selling author coming on, James Grappando, and he wrote a book called The Penny Jumper, and it's about Wall Street and some high-tech trading, and it's really, really an incredible book. I mean, I don't normally read the books that I'm sent when authors, God, I mean, I do read some of it, but for me to sit down and read a whole book from front to cover, I did his, busted. It was that good. And it only took me 4 hours, so it wasn't a really big, you know, long read. So he will be on shortly. And I'm just reminding everybody to join other people to the Enlightened Movement 2016 website, and it's enlightenmentmovement2016.shutterfly.com, and that's enlightenmentmovement2016.shutterfly.com. And we're doing another quantum leap on the 31st of this month. You know, you might as well negate Halloween and let light move forward, right? And all I'm going to ask everyone to do is on that day, as much as you can, and you can think about it, just chant, may divine enlightenment descend on everyone now. May divine enlightenment awaken within everyone now. May divine enlightenment descend on everyone now. May divine enlightenment awaken within everyone now. And what's really cool about this chant is that people are already doing it. Yay. We certainly need it. I mean, if you don't think we need enlightenment, especially the United States, just take a look at our in our presidential election. And I'm not going to say much about that because all I can say is God, heaven, you know, help us. And you know, we really need to do some quantum leaping, and that's why I decided to hold another quantum jump on this month, because let's do it before the presidential election, because we can. And the earth and the world needs it. Pipeline protest in North Dakota is still going on, of course. Obama has still not come in and shut it down. So if you would like to call him and protest and, you know, really tell him what you think, it's 202-456-1111. That's the White House number. And the fax, 202-456-2461. Now, the Red Warrior Camp, the Medic Camp, their leader, and actually the Red Warrior Camp, you can catch them on Facebook, they're really asking people to come on out and help and to stand with them and to do everything you can. And this is divine service in action to gust and put your, you know, body up there so we have water. They are protecting the water and the land up there. And if you want to send them donations, let me give you their address. It's Red Warrior Camp. And this is the initial B as in boy, I as in ice, E as in elephant, B-I-E, 00N02 Agency Avenue, 48 North Dakota, 58538. I'll give it to you again. It's Red Warrior Camp, BIE00N02 Agency Avenue, Fort Yates, North Dakota, 58538. And they're asking not only for bodies, but we're going into wintertime, folks, and it's going to start to get cold. So they can use warm clothes. They can use wood, water, tents, heaters, all kinds of medical equipment. Yeah, I'm sure anything you can take up there, food, is greatly appreciated. And, you know, this is a great way to do service if you can. If you can't actually stand on there and be out there, you can support them either by sending them a donation so they can go buy this stuff, or, you know, if they need an attorney, it helps with that and it helps get people out of jail when the government puts them in jail for being peaceful protester, a peaceful protector. I mean, it's crazy. Talk about reptilian and how everything is turned upside down, isn't it? And let me give you the corporate headquarters information for Oasis Petroleum, who is, you know, part of this big oil and pipeline up in North Dakota. And their address is 1001 Fannin Street, F-A-N-N-I-N, Suite 1500, Houston, Texas, 77002. And their phone number is 281-404-9500. Call the White House. Tell them that you are watching and you want some action and you want that water protected and you want the pipeline not to go through and for them to pull out. So the presidential phone number is 202-456-1111. Let's do a little bit of energy work for those guys up there and all the protectors of the land. So we're going to imagine this big bubble of light in front of us, and I just want you to imagine yourself connecting with the Creator and filling up this bubble with all kinds of energy while we're going to put in all the equipment in this bubble of light, all the bulldozers, the anything that they use for digging on the pipeline, the diggers, the trucks, the tractors, cars, all the electrical equipment, all their walkie-talkies. This is all elementals, okay, that's been recreated from the earth, reformed, and they can be either used to hurt or harm. And in this case, they're being used to harm the earth. So we're going to call to Michael the Archangel and cut the ties between whoever's asking them to do, you know, harm to the earth and humans. And all the machines, and we call forth the violet flame to transmute all the machines, all that energy. We're going to send the violet flame into this bubble and now see all these machines, all this equipment being reconnected to the Creator. Now we're going to command them to be neutral, to break down, to keep breaking down. Now imagine all this equipment in the center, and we're going to send energy now to all the weakest spots and all the tractors, the bulldozers, the trucks, everything that's being used on the pipeline. And as it hits all those weak spots, all that equipment gently breaks down, but does it in a way where no one will be hurt or harmed. And see all the equipment breaking down to where it all has got to be removed and it's not being replaced. We call the President Obama, and we put him in this bubble, and the Army Corps of Engineers. We're going to ask them to step forward in the light and do the right thing. See them reconnect to the Creator, becoming an awakened spiritual beings, and seeing that they need to protect the land and speak up for it, and not allow this pipeline to go through. And as we ask it for the pipeline in North Dakota, see it being done for the one in Missouri, and the one, they're being done all over the place. See all these pipelines being stopped. And again, put all the protesters in this bubble of light, and let them be sent so much energy that they're recharged, they're regenerated. See them being kept warm and being sent everything they need to win this fight, food, clothes, money, and pro bono attorneys. And let all those movie stars and all those famous people, let them hear the call and do service work up there. And for all of them that are putting themselves out on the line, and there are a few, Shailene Woodley is one of them, bless her heart. and see more of those famous people getting out of their comfort zone and speaking up for the planet and going out and standing with these people and giving it the attention that they need through their famous, through their being famous. And we're going to put in all the police in this bubble and all the National Guard and the military that are up in North Dakota and all over the pipelines that are standing against the protectors. We call them, Michael, to cut the ties between whatever is creating them to stand with darkness and the pipeline. And we're going to ask Michael to remove all that energy and ask them to help them reconnect to the Creator so they become an awakened spiritual being. And as they become an awakened spiritual being, they see everyone as mother, father, sister, brothers, aunts, uncle, cousins, family, people who they wouldn't hurt. And as they awaken and become an awakened spiritual being, they also have this higher respect for the land. And see them standing down and going to stand with the protectors and protect them. And if any animals are used or dogs with the intent of hurting or harming, we again cut the ties between them and their masters. We reconnect them to the Creator. And we fill them up with love and we command them to be neutral, to not obey their trainers, to not hurt or harm. And also stand down. And let's remove all the veils of energy that's keeping all this from going worldwide and the world seeing everything and all those reporters going out there and getting it out there and being protected as they get that information out to the public. And the public responding. And they respond by not only sending them support in however they can, but also calling the White House and the petroleum companies. All right, so I want you to fill this bubble of light up with all kinds of energy and light and love. And we're going to take a deep breath and release it. I'm going to do one more quick bubble of light, and this is for the our mountain, Mauna Kea, in Hawaii, where they want to put this big telescope up and the big conglomerates are at it again. They're going to put them in this bubble, this conglomeration, because they're going to court and every day they're trying to get permits through. So we're going to call to Ganesha, the remover of obstacles, to put all kinds of obstacles up in front of these guys, so they don't get the paperwork in time. And whoever's putting this paperwork together, let them be dyslexic, doing it wrong, let them not be able to file on time, and see all kinds of obstacles in whatever vehicles that they're using, whether it's cars, buses, trains, bikes, horses, their feet to get there. We're going to ask that all these machines, these elementals, break down if their intent is trying to get to court to try to keep this huge telescope and getting it up in Hawaii, and see them being blocked, this conglomeration being blocked and the permits being blocked. Let it be delayed. Let the judges stand for the land. All right, let's take a deep breath and release it. So for those of you that don't know what's going on in Hawaii, these big conglomerations of corporations throughout the world in all these different countries wanted to put this, I think it's an 18-story telescope up on one of our sacred mountains here. And the Hawaiians and all the protesters here have kept them off the mountain and kept them from putting up that telescope for a couple years, but these guys just don't give up. I mean, they are amazing. Well, the Hawaiians don't give up either, because that's sacred space. And, I mean, you have to think about it. This is Hawaii. The land moves all the time. It constantly, you have little mini earthquakes and sometimes little bigger earthquakes, but the land moves. We have an active volcano here. So nowhere on the island is an 18-story building allowed to be built. Let alone, you're going to put it on top of the tallest mountain. They've got, going to have so much computers in there that it's going to take 10,000 gallons of water a day to cool it. Yeah, did you hear me? 10,000 gallons of water a day just to cool those computers. And there's like 11 telescopes up there already. You know, it's not like they don't have this stuff already, but they want this super, super duper one up there. You know, so you step back and you go, God, you know, they're going to, why? They're really only pushing this. This is only supposed to be a telescope. And I actually heard, and you know how truth comes up and slips out, that one of the senators in the Hawaii legislative branch in Honolulu was talking that why we had to have this telescope up because what happens one day if we've got this meteorite coming at us and it's going to hit the Earth? Because we'll be able to take this telescope and shoot it out of the sky. And I was thinking, whoa, there. You know what I mean? Shoot it out of the sky. Since when did telescopes were weaponized, you know? So you know it's military, but it actually even gets to be more sinister. And all then you learn that all these observatories all over the world talk to each other, and they're all linked up in some way. And they've all got these supercomputers and these high-tech stuff. And these people that work at the observatories that are Thank you, God. They're astrophysicists. Well, these astrophysicists are actually being drawn into Wall Street. And they're using them and their computer skills to create these algorithms. And, you know, I don't want to give it away, but this is what James Grippando's book is about. And it just kind of blew me away how all of this stuff just kind of, for me, just, you know, with this telescope thing going on there. And I'm questioning, why in the world is it going up? And here this man writes this book about Wall Street. You're going, whoa, and he's got, you know, the telescope, observatories in there. So it's an amazing book, and I can't wait till he gets here. You know, Joe, we might have to call him because I hope he doesn't have the time wrong, which people do all the time. So I'm going to shoot you his number, okay? He's probably not even listening. There we go. He was. Oh, my God. See, I can't type and read the screen at the same time. I don't have four eyes. So this is really why I'm excited about James coming on. And now in the case of James Grippando and his story, the research that he did for this book raises a lot of questions about corporate conspiracy, computer control, and ineffective or evolved law enforcement that would likely get you sued into the 22nd century if told as nonfiction. Now, James Grippando is a New York best-selling author of 24 books, including several bestsellers inspired by recent Wall Street scandals. Hi, James. Are you there?
I am here.
All right. Let me read the rest of this, and I'll get right with you, because I'm telling them about you.
My favorite subject. Thank you.
All right, well, James lives, works, and writes near Miami, Florida, along Diagonal on the map, but a keystroke by computer. His latest release, The Penny Jumper, is set in the complex financial world of high-frequency trading. And, you know, it's kind of fiction that makes you nervous, but, man, it caught my attention, and I couldn't put the book down. Now, Mr. Grappando's law firm represented Goldman Sachs in connection with the federal government's high-profile prosecution of a former computer program accused of stealing confidential source code for the company's high-speed trading system. And, yeah, it's an amazing book. Okay, it's your turn to come on, James. I finished the book, okay?
Yeah.
I loved it because you made the woman brilliant. It really was fast-paced. I mean, I read it in 4 hours.
Wow. Yeah, and the best part of the brilliant woman protagonist is that it's inspired by my daughter. So, I just love that part of it, you know. And I've written 25 novels, and I don't try hard to work my family into books, but every now and then they will do something that I latch on to and feel like, you know what, there's an essence of a character there. And so this young woman who is a brilliant astrophysicist who has been in all her life, her goal has been to build the world's biggest telescope and decides to pay off her mountain of college debt by becoming a physicist who works on Wall Street, was a great kernel of truth that I needed to latch onto and write about. So when I discovered there were 3,000 astrophysicists working on Wall Street, I thought, wow, that's pretty intriguing, right? You know, so I hope people will find that as interesting to read as I did to do the research.
Okay, I have to say, and I'm not going to give the end away, okay, but it left me lagging. I mean, I wanted more. It's like, that's it. It was a good ending, okay, but it was, I'm going to say, why didn't you go into the guy that, you know, who owned the company that, you know, I mean, that's a book all in itself.
Yeah, you know, this is my first novella, okay? So this is only, I mean, The Penny Jumper is about 150 pages long, and people will, you know, we've all read, believe it or not, you know, I think everyone who's listening has read a novella at some point in their life. There's some that are pretty famous, like, for example, The War of the Worlds was a novella. Of Mice and Men was a novella. Breakfast at Tiffany's was a novella. And as an author, you got to make a decision about, what is the best way to tell this story? And I've written 24 novels, full-length novels, which a novel is typically at least 90,000 words. But The Penny Jumper, I felt, you know, the focus of it is high-speed trading on Wall Street. And sort of that whole notion of high speed translated to me to something like, if you're going to read about high-speed trading, you should be reading it in high speed, right? So I wanted
incredible. I mean, that's what I felt like.
Yeah,
you know, I said, and I got through it in 4 hours.
Yeah, and that was the goal, you know. And so, you know, where it started, you know, was the whole idea. My daughter, who's now only 10, but at the time, she had this fascination with outer space, and she reminded me of one of my my doggy in the background. Sorry about that. But one of my favorite movies of all time is Contact, and there's a character in the movie played by Jodie Foster, who was this young female astrophysicist, and she reminds me so much of my daughter. So that is sort of the inspiration for the character, and she's always been fascinated with this idea of, are we alone in the universe, right? And when I discovered that, I started looking into, what does it take to become an astrophysicist? And I discovered there were 3,000 physicists working on Wall Street. Like, well, what is that about, right? You know, why are all of these people with this unique ability working on Wall Street? And that's when I discovered this whole world of physicists writing computer programs, code, algorithms that account for almost 75% of the trading that goes on Wall Street today. And so that was the start of it.
Well, what's a penny? Your book's called The Penny Jumper. What's a penny jumper?
Penny jumper is one of those algorithms that these physicists, you know, it makes you wonder, like, you know, we all have this image in our head of what Wall Street is, right? And probably it's driven by this whole idea of, you know, a bunch of people shouting at each other and on the stock exchange floor and papers flying everywhere. That's the old idea of what's going on Wall Street. What's going on now is that most of the majority of trading that goes on Wall Street right now is done by computer servers. And so where there was once the shouting and the yelling and the papers flying and people sweating and everyone, you know, yelling buy and sell, now it's just the quiet world of servers sitting, you know, stacks of computer servers sitting and anticipating what someone else is going to do and trying to figure out what the competition is going to buy or sell through computer programs and algorithms. So a penny jumper is part of that world, that whole world of, 70% of trading now is no longer a human function. It is a computer that is programmed to figure out, you know, what is the correct move to make in terms of a buy or a sell or a trade. And so a penny jumper, the best way to explain it, I think, to your listeners, is here's how it works. Okay. I love my baseball analogy. So I took my son to his first Cubs game. I grew up North Chicago. I live in Florida, but I grew up North Chicago as a Cub fan. So I took my son for his 18th birthday. I took him to a Cubs game for the first time. So, okay, so let's say we're standing outside of Wrigley Field, and we decide that we want to buy 4 tickets, okay? So we go up to a scalper. We don't have tickets. We want to get into the game. And so we say, okay, Mr. Scalper, we're willing to pay $100 per ticket, and we need 4 tickets. And he says, well, I only have 2 tickets. And we're saying, fine, okay, we'll take these 2, right? Well, the algorithm in this equation, the penny jumper algorithm, is the guy who hears us say that we're willing to pay $100 per ticket. So that guy runs down the block and says, you know what? He buys 2 tickets at $100 apiece. And then when we approach him, he is willing to sell it to us for $100.01, right? So that's the penny component of it, right? So we go up, and by the time we get to that scalper, we're willing to pay $100, but he wants to charge us $100.01 because he knows what our intentions are. He knows what our strike price is. So we pay that extra penny. Now, you might be wondering, okay, how does anybody really make any money by charging that extra penny based upon that tip of information that they have, that I'm willing to pay $100 per ticket, but you know what, $100.01 isn't going to break the bank. The reason that, and that's what's happening on Wall Street on these high-speed trading, is that that scalper who runs ahead and buys that ticket before we can buy it knows that we're willing to pay that $100 price. And so he charges us an extra penny, but in Wall Street, that's happening every 5 microseconds. And let me tell you what a microsecond is. It takes, if I were to click on a mouse on my computer, that's 500,000 microseconds. So a high-speed trader who has a penny jumper algorithm is buying and selling stock every 5 microseconds. Did you get that? So I said 500,000 microseconds is what it takes to click a mouse, and a high-speed trader is making a purchase and a sale every 5 microseconds. So those pennies add up. That's what it boils down to. Those pennies.
You've talked about, too, over and over, what algorithm. Can you really explain a little bit further what an algorithm is?
Yeah, see, an algorithm, in terms of Wall Street, the algorithms is basically what I described, the human function of the buyers and sellers down on the floor of Wall Street. That used to be done by human beings. Now it's done by computers. Algorithms, though, are much, much broader than Wall Street, or even broader than computers. An algorithm is very simply, you know, a set of instructions that lays out a sequence of events that need to occur in order to perform a certain task. And so an algorithm, you know, you can have an algorithm to make a grilled cheese sandwich. You know, it would take 2 pieces of bread, take some cheese, turn on the stove, you know, grill it till it's brown on the outside. That's an algorithm.
You gave one, I think you gave, when we were talking before about what a company does when you call them up and they say, you know, we're going to record this. Can you explain that one again?
Yeah, you know, because, I mean, an algorithm, where algorithms get interesting is not when they tell you how to make a grilled cheese sandwich, but when they perform human-like functions by computers. So if you can get a computer or a machine to make you a grilled cheese sandwich, that's pretty interesting. That's a more complicated algorithm. An even more complicated algorithm might be an algorithm that is capable of performing, well, you know, I might be stretching it a little bit here, but not much, psychoanalysis, right? And what you just asked me about this is one of the things that came across in my research for the penny jumper is, and this is totally has nothing to do with Wall Street, but it is something we can all relate to. And that is, you know, we've all dialed the customer service number, right? And the first thing you get anytime you call, whether it's a bank or a vacuum cleaner that you need repaired or whatever it is, you call customer service, and the first thing you hear is that, you know, this call will be recorded for training purposes. And most of us are like, yeah, well, that makes sense. You know, that's fine. You know, you want to record this call for training purposes, fine. But it's not always for training purposes. In fact, most of the time when we consent to saying that this call may be recorded, about 6 million algorithms kick into place. And what are they doing? Well, those algorithms are assessing our tone of voice, our sentence structure, how we use pronouns and verbs, basically how we talk. And those algorithms are assessing all of those speech patterns, every aspect of our speech, and they assign us a personality quotient. And that personality quotient is attached to our phone number, so that, you know, this is not an academic exercise. This is specific to us. So that the next time we call in with the same phone number, the algorithm, this computer program that will connect that personality quotient to our phone number. And according to the company that does this, which, by the way, has invested tens of million dollars into this, and I think there's 6 billion phone conversations that are actually stored in a data center the size of a football field in Minnesota that contains all these conversations. So that company's algorithm attaches the phone number to the personality quotient, and when we call in the second time, it's routed. Our call is routed to a customer service representative who has a similar personality quotient. And according to the company, that results in the length of the calls reduces 60%. And the customer satisfaction rating supposedly increases from about 47% to 95%.
So that's why I get all the comedians?
Yeah, well, maybe, that may be it. You know, I mean, I don't know the full spectrum of the personality quotients, but sense of humor's got to be in there, right?
Oh, you know, I mean, it makes you want to really mind. Screw these guys. You answer the phone and you go, "Hi, wow, we do it." Oh, I am really mad. You're just really mess with your voice.
Yeah, well, and that is sort of the one thing that you wonder because algorithms do adapt, right? So can you fool the algorithm by messing with them, or are they like Hal in 2001: A Space Odyssey, and they know when you're messing with them? You know, right?
You don't know until you start doing it, right? But if you think that many people do it, maybe it would just blow the computer up. I don't know. I'm just saying.
I'm
from the Midwest, I'm from Michigan, and we have this really biting, sarcastic, odd sense of humor. And if you're from Chicago, you kind of get me.
Yeah.
And it's God, what would happen if we did this now? Now, I'm going to be aware every time I talk to them, and I'm just going to go, nope, not going to do it. Nope, you're not recording me. I mean, that should just mess them up just to begin with, right?
I do a little bit of the same thing. We're all online and algorithms, for the Penny Jumper, I was specifically researching algorithms in the context of the financial world, right? But any curious soul, I would go down different routes, things that never made it into the book at all, and this whole idea of data mining is closely related to the algorithms, because an algorithm is only as good as the data that is input, right? So if, for example, I think probably for all the listeners out there, the one way they are most familiar with algorithms is in the sense of if you've ever shopped online, you get a recommended purchase, you know. And I think I'm guessing most people understand that there's not, you know, there's not some poor guy trapped in a room somewhere reviewing our purchase history, right? Of that's an algorithm that totally figures out that, okay, we bought this, and that in the past, and so we might want to purchase this color dress or this book or whatever it might
be.
Well,
if you look at the bottom, and I know Amazon Prime, whatever, you know, Amazon.com, where you buy a lot of stuff from, you look at something, and then down below they'll go, okay, now people that have bought this also bought, and then they'll list about 7-8 different items. Is that what you're talking about?
And that's completely, that's computer driven. There's no human being behind that. So, and in some ways, you know, that's a good thing. You know, I guess, you know, maybe we appreciate those recommendations. And but those are all, it's a good example of algorithms taking over a human function. Because, you know, in my own business, I'm a writer. You know, I've written 25 novels, and when I first entered into the business, what I relied on was independent bookstores who would knew their customers and would make a personal recommendation to someone and say, oh, there's Mrs. Jones. I know she liked this, and that book, and so I will, I'm going to make a recommendation of you know, whatever. And now that human function has in large part now been replaced by a computer algorithm, and the same thing, you know, in the penny jumper, where it used to be buying and selling and trading stock used to be a completely human function, it is now 70% driven by a computer algorithm that not only is replacing a human function, but as I said, think about the time frame. It's almost beyond human. Forget human function. It's almost beyond human comprehension, where trades are occurring 5 microseconds when it takes 500,000. Microseconds to click a mouse.
Well, what I'm fascinated is how, you know, you're just kind of tying this together with the telescopes and the observatories. And I think I mentioned to you, you know, like being here in Hawaii on top of Mount Mauna Kea, they want to put in this 18-story, super huge observatory, this telescope, right?
Right.
And it would take 10,000 gallons of water a day to cool the computers. And all I'm thinking is, why in the world would they need such, you know, all that computers? And then
right.
Here you come and write your book, and I'm going, oh, this is interesting.
It was the whole idea of space exploration that sort of drove my when you're writing a book, you really you start writing a book, at least I do, with sort of the what if kind of concept. You're looking for a hook. And for me, the initial hook was a very close friend of mine who actually is from Hawaii. His name is Tom Bales. And Tom is one of the most brilliant people I've ever met in my life. So Tom's from Hawaii, and Tom went to MIT, and he's quite a character. I actually wrote him into the penny jumper because he's such a character. Because even though he was living in Cambridge, Massachusetts, for all that time, he still wore, no matter how cold it got, wore the short sleeve Hawaiian shirts. So Tom's a character. But Tom has probably about 65 different patents that he owns, and his passion right now is the search for, as he calls it, quote unquote, cosmic company. Cosmic company being, are we alone in this universe? You know, and and when you think about the sun being one of four, and I'm not making this up, one of 400 billion stars in our galaxy, and that it takes, 100,000 light years to travel from one end of our galaxy to the other end of our galaxy, and that the next galaxy is 2.5 million light years away from us, and that even though that it takes 2.5 million light years to get from the end of our galaxy to the next galaxy, there are probably 200 billion other galaxies out there.
I'm feeling really small right now.
Yes, that's the idea, right? 200 billion other galaxies out there. So the search is on for, okay, either that is a tremendous waste of space, or there has to be life out there somewhere. And so the quest here is to figure out what's the best way to assess whether there's something out there. And we sort of operate from the premise of water is the essence of life. You know, so we're looking for a planet like Earth that has water or had water for a period of time. And the way this has the most fruitful methods of exploration have been, and I don't know the specifics of the observatory that you're talking about in Hawaii, although in The Penny Jumper, the book does end in Hawaii, with good reason, as I hope people will read and find out. But it is that it's really not about a single geographic point on planet Earth that enables us to dig deep into space to find out, is there a planet out there like ours that has water. It is the interconnected search of various points on the globe. For example, the most recent discovery of a planet that is like, somewhat like Earth, it's a planet, Gliese, G-L-E-I-S-E. And it's a little bigger than Earth, but it has very similar properties to us. And it's the right distance from the star that it orbits to be like us. But that planet was discovered not by the Hubble telescope that orbits the Earth and has been since 1990, and not from a single observatory in Hawaii, like the one you're building, but...
No, the one we're not building.
Oh, you're not building. Okay. But it was from an interconnected network of observatories, two in Chile and one in Australia. And the reason that works is because you can observe things in outer space simultaneously from various points on the globe. And believe it or not, in The Penny Jumper, that became a real core of the plot for me when I discovered that, and this is the kind of stuff you just can't make up, but the astrophysicists who are now working on Wall Street and completely understand the science behind concepts like time synchronization and observation of cosmic rays from various points of the globe. Well, that same science about time synchronization and coordination of input and output of data is what drives the whole high-frequency trading network on Wall Street. I'm not a scientist.
You were talking about in your book that at such high speed that these traders try to get as close as they can to these supercomputers to just even get that, you know, little millisecond jump on everything. Now, are these supercomputers kind of near the observatories?
Well, that's an interesting point. That's a great question because one of the things that the Massachusetts Institute of Technology did is because they're so involved in the these interstellar observations and the coordination of the various observatories around the planet. And the best way for your listeners to understand this is like try to think of, you know, an observatory in Hawaii interconnected with an observatory in Australia, interconnected with an observatory in Chile, interconnected with an observatory that, wherever. Each one of those observatories is like a pixel in a digital photograph, right? And if they all are synchronized perfectly through these atomic clocks that dictate or determine, you know, that we all operate under, they can give us an exponentially better view of what's going on in outer space than a single pixel would give us in a picture, right? So we get a better picture of what's going on out there, So I lost my train of thought there.
Remind me of the Lord of the Rings.
So you've got all of these observatories interconnected in this way, and that's really what makes the whole system work, right? Is that these atomic clocks work, for example, I mean, right now we've been able to break down time to the analysis of how many times it takes a cesium atom to vibrate back and forth. We're gonna measure 1 second in time based on how many times it takes an atom in a single molecule to vibrate back and forth. And so the way we've broken down time now is so fine that we now measure it by the fact that it takes a cesium atom 9 trillion times to vibrate back and forth, and that's 1 second. That's one second.
Well, so we've got 1 minute left, James Garbando.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about the...
So where can people get the book? We only have 1 minute left.
Got it. You know, the book it can be bought on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and they'll enjoy it. It's the penny jumper. I think we all need to stretch our brains a little bit. We've sort of spent the last 3 months just trying to respond to Donald Trump's tweets. So let's expand our brains a little bit and learn a little bit about how algorithms affect the world we live in and what might be beyond might be beyond the world we live in.
It's really a good book. I really highly recommend it. And, you know, I don't read many books. I mean, not completely, but yours I did do completely. And I really can't wait till you write the next one.
Thank you. It was a fun book to write, and I do all my own research. And so please have your listeners tell me if I made any mistakes.
Uh-oh. And on that high note... I hope you come back. It was really a fascinating book, and you really opened my eyes to what goes on up there. And, you know, to connect it to the computers and that high speed, it's like, you know, like, oh my God. And
it's almost 30,000.
I know we probably got 30 seconds, but when you had, you know, your character go to trial. And I have to say, I know you're from a law firm, but, you know, when you came up with these brilliant ideas, all I could think of is, good one, you know. Oh, that was really good. Okay. So I really enjoyed it. So thank you for writing it, coming on the program.
My pleasure. You know, and the Penny Jumper is, just so your readers know, it really is. It was a joy to write because I have two daughters, and to be able to write a book about a young woman who is so bright and so on top of things was really gratifying for me. And thank you for allowing me to share that with your listeners.
Oh, thank you. And I enjoyed, you know, reading her, going, God, I love this woman. She's brilliant.
Yeah. Thank you.
And the lawyer wasn't too bad either. Okay. Well, and that was James Grappondo and his new book, The Penny Jumper. And it really is a good book, guys. You really need to read it. So, aloha, James.
Thank you so much. All right, total.
Views and opinions of any of the guests of After Hours 8.